ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Matt Ellerbeck, a salamander conservation advocate. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news.
Beef Products, Inc., a South Dakota meat company whose lean, finely textured beef product was dubbed Pink Slime this year, has sued ABC News for defamation and is seeking $1.2 billion in damages. The company, which after controversy closed three of its four plants and laid off 700 workers, filed suit in state court in Elk Point, South Dakota this week. It alleges that ABC News' coverage of the Pink Slime controversy misled consumers into believing that the product was unsafe, even though it had been approved for human consumption by the USDA. The lawsuit names as defendants ABC News, owned by Walt Disney Company, as well as anchor Diane Sawyer and reporter Jimmy Avila. Dan Webb, a Chicago-based attorney hired to represent the company, said ABC News engaged in a massive and destructive, focused attack on our product and our business. The suit says that in a 30-day period, the news organization made 200 false and disparaging statements regarding BPI and its product, and as a result, beef products saw its sales drop by 80%. The suit also seeks punitive damages, Webb said, though how much was not specified. Lean, finely textured beef, as the product is known, is made from beef trimmings and undergoes a process to remove fat. It is treated with ammonium hydroxide to kill bacteria. It was given the moniker Pink Slime by a former USDA scientist. After NBC News began reporting on the product, beef products face a widespread consumer backlash, and grocery chains nationwide began pulling beef containing the product from their meat sections. Jeffrey Snyder, senior vice president for ABC News, said in a statement, "The lawsuit is without merit. We will contest it vigorously." As other media outlets began covering the Pink Slime debacle, the beef industry attempted to mount a defense of lean, finely textured beef. The American Meat Institute sought to ease consumers' fears by providing fact sheets on the product. Even elected officials came to the company's defense. Governors from Texas, Kansas, and Iowa, states where beef products had plants, toured the facilities and urged consumers not to reject the product. You can avoid pink slime today by adopting a vegetarian or vegan diet.
The Harvard Nurses Health Study is an ongoing study of over a quarter of a million nurses, which began in 1976. It's considered the most definitive long-term study ever conducted on women's health. Last year, the researchers involved in the study reported that the daily consumption of the amount of cholesterol found in a single egg appeared to cut a woman's life short as much as smoking 25,000 cigarettes. In other words, they found the same amount of cardiovascular damage in egg eaters as in a 40-year pack-a-day smoker. And in September, a study published in the journal Arteriosclerosis found that just three eggs or more a week was associated with a significant increase in artery-clogging plaque buildup, a strong predictor of stroke, heart attack, and death. Those that ate the most eggs had as much as two-thirds more risk than those who smoke the most in the study. This latest study was performed by three experts on nutrition: Dr. David Spence, the director of the Stroke Prevention and Arteriosclerosis Research Center; Dr. David Jenkins of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at the University of Toronto; and Dr. Jean DeVognan, the director of the Hyperlipidemia and Arteriosclerosis Research Group at the Institute for Clinical Research in Montreal. Dr. Spence, the lead investigator on the new study, stated that egg yolks shouldn't be regarded as an item that's suitable for human diets. The egg industry countered that the safety limit cholesterol intake that may not even allow a single egg is only for people at risk for heart disease. Dr. Spence's reply was simple. Everyone is at risk of heart disease. It's the number one killer of men and women. According to Dr. Spence, the only people who should eat eggs regularly are those with a terminal illness. This new study caused the egg industry to try to do damage control. As revealed in a series of internal American Egg Board memos retrieved through the Freedom of Information Act, Mitch Kantner, the executive director of the American Egg Board's Egg Nutrition Center, proposed they contact some friends in the science community to have an objective external source prepare a response. Mitch wrote to one of their friends at Yale offering compensation for a statement to counter the study's findings, but the prominent Yale physician refused to participate. Dr. Spence compares egg industry tactics to those of big tobacco and said, "Who are you going to believe, somebody who sells eggs or three leading experts on cardiovascular disease prevention?" In their landmark review, Drs. Spence, Jenkins, and Devognan concluded that waiting until our first stroke, heart attack, or diabetes diagnosis to avoid eggs may not be prudent. They conclude stopping egg consumption after a heart attack or stroke would be like quitting smoking after a diagnosis of lung cancer. Unnecessary action, but late. To be fair, eggs are not the most concentrated source of dietary cholesterol. According to the official USDA nutrient database, eggs come in second. Brains are number one. The only group that appears at higher risk than egg eaters would be zombies.
Wild Earth Guardians reports that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed to list the Jemez Mountain Salamander, Plethodon neomexicanus, as endangered under the Endangered Species Act and to designate critical habitat for the species. The small brown and gold salamander was first made a candidate for listing in 1982. The service identified forest mismanagement, a multitude of land uses, and effects from climate change as primary threats to the salamander. According to Brian Bird, a forest ecologist with Wild Earth Guardians, the salamander faces immense challenges to its survival from climate change and unnatural fire. The first order of business is to end the most immediate threats, including logging and off-highway vehicle use in its only known home, the Jemez Mountains of New Mexico. The service found that the salamander's habitat is threatened by numerous factors such as changing forest composition and structure, forest and fire management, logging, roads, and climate change. The service has proposed to designate over 90,000 acres in two large areas as critical habitat for the salamander. Let's hope the proposal goes through.
Stay with us. We'll learn more about salamanders in our next segment when we have a conversation with Matt Ellerbeck, salamander conservation advocate. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on ACT Radio, Matt Ellerbeck. Thanks for being with us on the show, Matt.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Matt, can we start out by having you tell our listeners a little how you got involved in animal issues?
Yes. As a child, I grew up in the GTA, so that's the Greater Toronto Area, up in Ontario. So it was a very urbanized center. But in the summertime, I would go and spend a lot of time with my grandparents out in rural areas, and I would see lots of wild animals, particularly reptiles and amphibians, and that's what sort of fostered my interest in animals. And I remember being very young, and if someone had said something negative about these animals, which a lot of people don't like reptiles and amphibians anyway, they really do receive a lot of negative comments. I would get very up in arms about it and, you know, why are you saying that? And would want to defend them. So as I got older, that interest in animals naturally evolved into a concern, and that led me at first into being involved with conservation, so outreach, education, teaching people about species at risk and things we can do to help them. And when I got started with that, I was very young. I was only about 19, and I was still a meat eater at that time, and I hadn't really thought much about animal rights, but I was talking about things that were sort of more animal rights based than just conservation. And I'd had other conservationists say to me, you know, that's really not a wildlife conservation issue. It's more animal cruelty. But to me, you know, if it was a threat to these animals, it all made sense. Like, I thought I should be talking about all of the, you know, detrimental things that are going on and which are causing these animals harm and or exploiting them or causing them declines in the wild. It all made sense to me. And then that sort of connection was made around that time that, oh, if I'm talking about all these things for these kind of animals, but yet I'm still eating other kinds, you know, I felt a little bit like a hypocrite. And then I started to learn a little bit more about animal rights issues in general, and that has led me to become a vegetarian and then a vegan. And so although my primary focus is salamanders and you know, amphibians and reptiles, I do certainly have an appreciation for all animals. And, you know, I don't believe that any animal should be subjected to pain or suffering or abuse or should be exploited for profit or any other things like that.
Thinking about salamanders for a moment, I know that populations have been declining in recent years. What are the greatest threats that salamanders and other amphibians face right now?
It's sort of a mixture of, number one, habitat destruction. So our, you know, human beings destroying natural areas, woodlands, forests, and wetlands. And then after that happens, we have, you know, urbanization moving in. And with that, you have all these chemicals like pesticides and herbicides and oils and gasolines being introduced into the fragmented areas of what natural areas are left. And salamanders, being amphibians, are very, very sensitive to chemicals. Their skin is almost like a sponge. It absorbs everything around it. So when you have all these contaminants move in, it kills off the remaining salamanders. And those that do survive have, you know, very low reproductive outputs, and they have offspring with all sorts of malformations and deformities. So it really is a mixture of us literally destroying their environment, and the fragments that remain are being degraded by, you know, various acts that, you know, human beings move in, and, you know, our detriment destroys what little fragments are left. And that, you know, when you take an animal's home away, it would be like, for listeners, it would be like coming home and finding your house bulldozed to the ground, and you'd have nothing left, no friends, no family, no resources, so your likelihood of survival at that point would be very low. And then imagine, you know, trying to survive in that destroyed rubble, and then, you know, someone coming in with all these harsh chemicals that are capable of killing you. That's essentially what we're doing to salamanders.
So it's not that surprising that their numbers are in global decline as human populations are ever expanding. Tell us a little bit more about why you think salamanders and amphibians and reptiles in general have a bad rap with the public.
It's a mixture, I think, of a lack of knowledge. And I mean, if you look at TV and media and movies and even old literature, like this is, you know, you can go back to, you know, the Bible, and the serpent or snakes are being portrayed as the devil, and old literature, turtles and snakes and salamanders are portrayed as evil, and they're not cute and cuddly. They're not fluffy like mammals are. That we give them the term cold-blooded, which even sounds a little bit, you know, negative. So we don't look at them the same as other animals. And I've run into other people who are self-proclaimed animal lovers and will say to me, you know, reptiles and they're not really even animals, are they? A salamander, that's not an animal. That's an amphibian, right? So there is, and this is what, you know, I find very bothersome is, if we talked earlier about animal rights and making connections and why a lot of people like myself want to go vegan to alleviate some of these animal issues. And then I think at the root of that is speciesism, where people think they're better than animals and we're superior to them and that we can thus have dominion over them. And when you have other animal lovers, you know, doing the same thing, it's very frustrating, where they're like, this cute and cuddly charismatic mammal, I don't want to see that suffering, but a slimy, cold-blooded salamander, you know, who really cares? And, you know, so that it does make for a very uphill battle because, I mean, in general, getting support around animal issues can be very difficult. And then when you're particularly advocating for the ones that, you know, are deemed as slimy and gross and ugly, it can make it even more difficult. So,
but even for those people that really don't care about animals, don't they serve an important role in the ecosystem?
The people that don't love animals, do they serve an animal? That I don't know, you know. I don't want too negative or crass, but, you know, we'll leave it at that. Their roles in the environment, they're very helpful to have around. And the first thing I should mention, though, when people talk about conservation, a lot of the times they talk about, you know, conserving the environment for its practical reasons.
Right.
You know, we hear sustainable practice, sustainable harvest. So essentially, a lot of conservationists are looking at keeping the environment in a somewhat pristine condition so humans can still benefit from the things that we need from it. On the front page of my site, I clearly state that my efforts to help salamanders is for their own intrinsic value, completely independent of their usefulness to humans. I think as tiny, breathing, living forms of life, you know, they're important in their own right. And salamanders have been on this earth for 160 million years, as have many, many groups of animals. That's long before humans appeared. And I think it was their planet first, and they have every right to live here free of human disturbance and exploitation, and should have the right to live without us, you know, decimating their habitats and destroying their homes. Now, that being said, they do provide benefits to human beings. That's not my primary reason for saving them, but for people that want to get on board for those reasons, I would tell them that, you know, they do provide a benefit because they're natural regulators of insect populations. So salamanders prey very heavily on insects and invertebrates and arthropods, and when salamander populations go down, those species will increase. Some salamander species prey on larval mosquitoes, so less salamanders means more bugs and more bug bites. And as we know, some insects and arthropods can spread diseases like Lyme disease and West Nile. Salamanders do help keep the spread of disease down. They're essential in keeping wetlands healthy, and wetlands act as natural flood and drought protectors. So having them around and protecting them certainly does provide human beings a very real benefit. And I think that a lot of people are very ignorant to the fact that they would say, who cares about a bunch of salamanders? What does it do? Just sit under a rock all day out in a forest somewhere? Like, at the end of the day, who really cares? And they have that mentality about nature and animals and the environment as a whole, and don't realize that, you know, we are living on this planet. We are connected to this planet. And the things that we do bad to one species will eventually, you know, cause a lot of harm and detriment to ourselves as well. And we don't seem to realize that. So protecting them will help ourselves as well. But as I mentioned before, even if they weren't providing us benefits by being our, you know, natural controllers of insects and things like that and keeping the wetlands healthy, I still think that, you know, they are a living form of life, and all life is very precious and very important.
How does the pet trade, speaking of human destruction, how does the pet trade industry affect salamanders?
The pet trade is not as bad with salamanders as it is for certainly other species of reptiles and amphibians. However, there are a lot of species that are unfortunately harvested from the wild. And again, when we're talking about the conservation concerns of these animals with habitat loss and, you know, the introduction of foreign chemicals and certainly other threats that they face, the last thing the population needs is people harvesting them, taking them out of the wild. And what happens is a lot of salamanders that are harvested, some of them end up in the bait trade for fishing. A lot of people will use salamanders as fishing lures. So you can imagine taking this poor animal and then stabbing it with a hook and then throwing it back into the water, which would be extremely painful. And yes, salamanders do have a central nervous system and pain receptors, so they can experience pain and suffering, and then waiting for another animal to come and eat it, and then unfortunately the fish gets killed too. So it's a very, very cruel trade, that whole side of it. And then some of them, the other ones that don't end up in the fishing trade, will end up, or for fishing bait, will end up into the pet trade where people can purchase them. Now, again, it's not as widespread as certainly other exotic animals, but it does exist out there. And when you're talking about an animal that is very, very endangered and half of all the world's species are listed at risk of extinction, you know, any harvest is going to be of great concern. And then the sad thing is, once they end up in the pet trade, a lot of people that buy them, it's very much on an impulse, and then they don't really know about the care that that animal needs, so a lot of them end up dying very quickly, because the pet trade market, amphibians and reptiles, is easy to care for, low-maintenance pets. And no animal should be labeled as low-maintenance. I mean, it should be deemed as, you know, like having a child. This is a little life form that is completely dependent on you for its care and well-being, and for, you know, the trade to market it as low maintenance is, you know, grossly irresponsible. And what happens is you get people walking off the street and see them and like, oh, that's kind of neat, and then they buy it, and the novelty wears off, and the animal unfortunately dies. So the pet trade is very harmful to them. Indeed, but maybe not as much as some of their other threats that they face.
Well, I did see on your webpage you had a picture of some poor salamanders that are sold in trinkets in plastic bags in Asia. That looked really like a hideous thing. So those are live salamanders that are sealed up into plastic packages and sold as keychains?
Yes, exactly. And so these little animals are sealed in plastic prisons where they're going to be devoid of fresh food and water and slowly starved to death in these little containers so people can walk around and keep them as keychains. The other thing is, you can imagine in tropical Asia, being trapped in a little plastic box, it's going to get very hot in there, so a lot of them probably die due to the extreme heat. Salamanders like cooler temperatures generally, and so being trapped, you know, if someone's carrying it around in a keychain and they're in a, you know, downtown city somewhere and it's a hot summer day, you can imagine how much that's going to warm up in there. So they're going to, unfortunately, literally be, you know, cooked in these, like, tiny little things. Also, someone can have one as a keychain. So that's a really gross way that salamanders are exploited for money.
They don't open up these keychains to feed them every now and then, right? I mean, as soon as they're sealed, they're on their way to dying?
Exactly. Once they're sealed, they're sent off to be sold, and that's the end of it. There's no way to open these packets up and offer the salamanders care. And even if they could, being trapped in a little clear container with a little bit of liquid solution, it is not, you know, a good environment for a salamander, and any attempts to offer any level of care at that point would really be nothing.
It's a terrible to think about those kinds of things that are happening in Asia, but bad things are happening here right in the U.S., and one of those is happening here in Texas with a new legislative proposal that's been put forward. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yes. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is proposed listing four salamander species. Those are the Austin Blind Salamander, the Georgetown Salamander, the Sausalito Spring Salamander, and the Plateau Salamanders as needing protection under the Endangered Species Act. I should mention that all of those salamanders are listed as threatened by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, mm-hmm. and that's the world's foremost authority on the conservation statuses of species. And what that means is when they are under the threatened designation, they are at risk of extinction. So all four of those salamanders are very much at risk. And so the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services want to grant them endangered species protection. However, there's been a huge uproar from various officials in Texas saying that if they protect those salamanders, it's going to hurt the economy. They can't possibly do that. You know, it's going to put too much restriction on landowners because obviously they're going to want to protect their habitat. Yeah, so it's Senator John Cornyn and then Republican John Carter. So there's two Johns that are working to author the Salamander Community Conservation Act, and that's a very misleading name.
Yeah.
So you'd think conservation, good. Well, no, the whole point of this act is to block these salamanders from getting protection. And many other officials across Texas have spoken out against this. And what I find happens with a lot of these environmental and conservation issues is that when any sort of legislation is in the works, I find that the opposition is very vocal because, again, it usually comes right back around to money mm-hmm. somewhere along the line. So you have all these people saying, oh, if we do this, it's going to ruin the economy. It's going to ruin the whole great state of Texas because of these little salamanders. So it's very important for concerned individuals to speak out and have their voices heard. Because when this happens, it creates a very sort of skewed look that where it appears that there's all this favor of not protecting these species when, in fact, I'm certain there are individuals who do care about protecting endangered species and biodiversity, but unfortunately, their voices are not heard. So I hope that listeners who do care about all animals will speak out, especially people in Texas. And if you visit my website, SaveTheSalamanders.com, and you go to the featured campaigns page, there is an online petition that started that is going to be sent to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that shows them that, you know what, there is support for this, especially people right in Texas.
And that's the petition that's on CARE 2, is that right?
Yes.
It's an important distinction for our listeners to make to oppose the Salamander Community Conservation Act and instead focus on getting them protection under the Endangered Species Act, correct?
Correct, yes.
Well, Matt, this has been very interesting talking with you today about this. And are there other regional or local issues that you have your finger on?
Right now, that's the big one that's going on in Texas. But the other thing is, when we were talking earlier about sort of the global decline in salamanders, the issues that affect salamanders in one area are usually pretty, you know, consistent all around the world. Habitat loss, you know, roads being run through their natural areas and they get killed on roads, and chemicals and harvesting for various trades. So if people do want to learn more, you can visit the website again, SaveTheSalamanders.com, and there's a page on there called How You Can Help, full of just very simple things that the everyday person could do that can help aid in the recovery of these species. And that is my ultimate goal. I don't want to just fill people with doom and gloom. Certainly the issues these animals face are very, very serious, and you know, they have tremendous hurdles against them, but I do provide a lot of resources and information on how people can get active and involved, and I hope that listeners out there that do care about animals and want to help contribute to the betterment of animals will visit that and learn what they can do to help. And certainly what we do good for salamanders is good for all sorts of other animals as well.
We've been talking with Matt Ellerbeck, salamander conservation advocate. We appreciate you being with us on ACT Radio, Matt. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
October is Vegetarian Awareness Month, and the Vegetarian Society of El Paso has many events planned for this month.
Yeah, you can join us for a vegan bake sale at the Pizza Joint at 2900 North Mesa on Saturday, October 20th, from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. We also have a restaurant hopper and a yoga in the desert class, as well as a vegan Asian cooking class. So if you want to take part in any of these activities, go to vsep.org and find out more information or register for the event.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen to Past Shows button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.